Canada's top tech expert turns geek speak into street speak. Tech Talk with Mark Saltzman on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hey everyone, welcome to Tech Talk on this first weekend of June. Hope you're making the most out of it. I recorded this show earlier in the week because I'm currently on a couple of business trips that I think you'll find interesting, and I'll chat about it with you next weekend. By the time you hear this, I'll be coming back from Brazil as I went to the Amazon rainforest to check out a solar tech hub. It's like a high-tech hut in the middle of the Amazon rainforest that provides telemedicine support to indigenous people via video conferencing with doctors. And there are other benefits too, like bridging the digital divide for tech literacy and education, upskilling for work opportunities in the area, and so on. Intel invited me to go as they partnered with Dell on this. Sounds super cool, and I'll tell you all about it when I return. Then, on June 5th and 6th, I'll be going to Cupertino, California with Apple to its WWDC, Worldwide Developers Conference. The cool kids call it WWDC. I'll tell you next weekend what all the highlights were from my vantage point in the crowd at Apple's auditorium and then breakout sessions. It's rumored that we'll see Apple's first ever mixed reality headset that fuses virtual reality with augmented reality. So I'm pretty stoked about that. Hope it's true. Plus, we'll see the latest iPhone operating system, iOS 17, and what that can do. Maybe some new Macs and so on. Again, I'm excited to share the news with you on next week's show. But that doesn't mean we don't have awesome topics and guests for you on this show. On the contrary, in fact, we'll chat about Wi-Fi 7 off the top of the program. The next generation of wireless internet is coming to your home. So we'll tell you what you need to know with Netgear being my guest. After that, General Motors will join us to talk about its first responder training tied to EVs or electric vehicles. On the back half of the show, Cisco joins us to talk artificial intelligence. Do we have anything to fear when it comes to AI? And tech expert Amber Mack will stop by to chat about tech for seniors, including those who want to, quote unquote, age in place, to stay at home as long as possible, independently, without having to move to an assisted living facility. All of this and more on Tech Talk, powered by Epson Canada, which I'll tell you more about shortly. But let's officially kick off this week's show with our first interview. Name something we all use at home, but often don't know when it's time to upgrade it. Well, if you said Wi-Fi, you'd be right. Chances are it's been a few years since you've upgraded your wireless internet, and performance may be lacking, especially if you have multiple devices on the network, which is often the case today. To teach us all about Wi-Fi 7, which is brand new, I wanted to invite onto the show Netgear's Sandeep Harpalani. He's VP of Product Management for Connected Home Products at Netgear. Hi, Sandeep. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Mark, for inviting me. Glad to be here.
Great. Now, before we talk Wi-Fi 7, please tell us a bit about Netgear, maybe a Netgear 101. What's the company all about?
So Netgear is a leader in providing Wi-Fi and networking solutions for the home market. We have been in this business for more than 25 years and really pride ourselves in terms of providing innovative networking products for people.
All right. So it is a home networking company, but there are obviously other companies out there that have routers and other kinds of solutions for the home. What would you say separates Netgear from the other companies out there?
So I think number one is this whole pedigree of being in this business for 25 plus years. We have a whole bunch of patents that cover various technologies. Our key focus has always been in terms of providing the best performance, easy setup and management for our customers. We try our best ensuring that you get the best coverage for your Wi-Fi through the farthest corner of your home, from your front yard to your backyard, as well as making sure whatever internet speed that you're subscribing to, whether it's 100 megabits or a gigabit, you're able to get the speed throughout your home. That's really the key focus in terms of making sure that customer gets the best Wi-Fi performance across all their devices and internet connectivity across all the devices in the home.
All right. And we'll talk about mesh systems more in a couple of moments from now for those with maybe larger properties or want to extend that wireless internet to the outside, maybe to the backyard or a front porch. Let's now pivot and talk Wi-Fi 7. What is it and what are the key benefits?
So Wi-Fi 7 is the latest Wi-Fi technology that has been introduced. Now, as we see faster internet speeds, we're already seeing speeds up to 5 gigabits, going up to 10 gigabits and so on, internet speeds inside the home. As we see newer applications like video streaming, people working from home, 8K video streaming or AR, VR applications, or increasing number of internet connected devices in the home. All of these are newer challenges, and that's where Wi-Fi 7 comes in terms of providing you a much, much more faster connection. It's about 2.4x faster than Wi-Fi 6, which is the older Wi-Fi 6 technology. It's much, much more robust in terms of it handles much better interference that comes from your neighbors and so on. It also provides much, much lower latency. So latency is extremely important when you're doing a video call or when you're gaming and so on. Response time needs to be critical. It's you will immediately notice it if you are a gamer, if there's any kind of a delay in terms of latency. So that's where Wi-Fi 7 comes in terms of being faster, in terms of much, much more robust, in terms of providing your Wi-Fi connections and lower latency. So just to add to that, it's not only 2.4x faster, but one of the biggest benefits of Wi-Fi 7 is it utilizes the 6 gigahertz band. So typically you have the 2.4 and 5 gigahertz band. It's now with Wi-Fi 6E and Wi-Fi 7, we're adding the 6 gigahertz band, which is a completely new Wi-Fi band, which is available for newer devices. So it's just like if you have a completely new highway, which can be utilized for newer devices. So as you bring in Wi-Fi 7, you're not only getting a faster speed, but you're also getting a new Wi-Fi band where you have the least amount of interference and you're able to get the best speeds.
That's great. Thank you for that. Can Wi-Fi 7 also serve as a mesh system? Why don't we bring everybody up to speed about that as well?
Let's explain a little bit in terms of the difference between a Wi-Fi router and a mesh. So mesh is basically multiple units. When you take a Wi-Fi router, which is maybe connected to your cable modem or your internet provider modem, and then you have a second or a third unit, which we typically call as a satellite, which is spread throughout the home. So if you want to provide a coverage to a larger home or to every corner of the home, one of the ways to do this is to have a mesh system, which is basically, which consists of a router and one or two more satellites that are spread throughout the home. So yes, Netgear's Wi-Fi 7 solutions can be set up as a mesh system. We actually have a separate line of mesh products, which are called the Orbi Wi-Fi mesh systems. There are some specific enhancements that we have done to talk about, again, the key focus in terms of providing the best performance. Orbi mesh systems have a separate Wi-Fi connection, which is connecting the router to the satellite. So which is completely independent of all other Wi-Fi connections that we have. So what it does is that if you're getting a gigabit internet connection to the home, you want to make sure that you're able to get that gigabit internet connection throughout your home. The way we do that is using a separate Wi-Fi band, which is dedicated for connecting the router to the satellites. So what it ensures is that if you have a single device, which is maybe trying to download a big file, it's not choking up your entire system. Your connection to the end devices and the connection to the satellite is completely different. It's like having a separate highway that connects to the router to the satellite and brings you the same gigabit internet speeds that you receive at one corner of the house to throughout the home.
That's a good analogy. Thanks for that. We are chatting with Sandeep Harpalani. He is the VP of Product Management for Connected Home Products at Netgear. We're talking about Wi-Fi 7, a new standard, and Netgear has a line or a family of products that embrace Wi-Fi 7 technology. How do you figure out if you're a consumer, Sandeep, and you're not sure what kind of a router or mesh system to invest in? How do you figure that out?
So the first thing to consider is really size of your home. How big is the home? How old is the home? What kind of construction do you have? Because Wi-Fi is sensitive to if you have an older home, which uses bricks and so on, it's much, much more difficult for Wi-Fi to go through it. So every situation is slightly different, but maybe to start off would be to look at the size of the home, who's living in the home. I have a home with a bunch of teenage kids who have their own lot of devices and so on, always connected, gaming. I work from home and so on. So I have a requirement in terms of making sure that I get a good internet connectivity throughout your home. Where do I work in terms of, do I work all across in terms of, do I have a TV at one corner of the house? What's the coverage that I need? So I think all of these things come into play in terms of choosing whether I need a Wi-Fi router, or I need a mesh system. And if I have a mesh system, how many satellites do I need and everything? And even there, in terms of what is the internet speed that I'm getting, based on that, I might need to upgrade even that mesh system to make sure that I'm getting the similar internet speeds throughout the home. We do provide some help on our website for customers to go and ask some simple questions, answer some simple questions, and we will then help them in terms of recommending the best solution for their home.
All right. And then again, with those satellites or hubs or pucks that you place around your home for a mesh system, it's modular. So you can always add more if need be. If you've got one dead zone where your home office is, or where the kids like to stream 4K video or play online games, then you can add one of those plug-in devices nearby that makes a wireless handshake back to the router, and you can fix that.
That is correct. So that's one of the biggest benefits of a mesh system, is that it's flexible. Things might change in terms of, I might buy a new TV and install it in the corner room and I want a better coverage, then I can add a satellite there. Or my internet speed increased, basically went from 500 megabits to a gigabit. It's at that point in time, I basically want a better coverage in a dead spot of the home. I can do that by adding another satellite, which will provide me a better coverage.
You also inadvertently brought up a good point, is that the speed that you're paying for with your internet service provider is also important. If you're able to upgrade, budget permitting, you know, you want to get faster speeds, because a router and a mesh system can only help so much if the internet speed coming into your home isn't fast enough. So that's something to also consider. How much do Netgear's Wi-Fi 7 solutions start at?
So we have introduced our first Wi-Fi routes, Wi-Fi 7 router, which is the Nighthawk RS700. That retails at $699. We'll also be introducing in our Orbi mesh systems with Wi-Fi 7.
So Orbi is your brand for a mesh system, ORBI, is that right?
That is correct.
Okay, and then Nighthawk is your high-speed router. And then the best website is simply netgear.com?
Yes, netgear.com. And if you want to know more about Wi-Fi 7, you can go to netgear.com/Wi-Fi 7.
All right, Sandeep Harpalani, great to chat with you.
Thank you for inviting me, Mark.
We'll be right back with more Tech Talk when we chat with GM about first responder training tied to EVs, electric vehicles. We'll be right back.
Canada's top tech expert. Tech Talk with Mark Saltzman on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Welcome back to Tech Talk, powered by Epson EcoTank, one of the biggest innovations in the printer space to date. If you have not yet heard of the EcoTank family of all-in-one printers, which of course are also scanners and copiers, out of the box, they ship with up to 2 years' worth of ink. When it's time to buy more ink, they're in bottles instead of cartridges, saving you up to 80%. Epson EcoTank printers work wirelessly with all your devices. Check out Epson EcoTank printers in store now or online at epson.ca/ecotank. Whenever General Motors is on the show, it's usually tied to a new vehicle, maybe something teched out like an EV, an electric vehicle, or maybe it's a discussion about its autonomous driving technologies like GM Super Cruise. But this time around, we're going to pull the curtain back and learn about GM's EV first responder training. We're joined by Joe McLean, GM's Global Product Safety and Systems Engineer. Hi, Joe. Thanks for your time. Thanks for being on the program.
You bet, Mark. Glad to be here.
I'm recording this interview in the parking lot of a GM dealership. I kid you not, but I didn't want to postpone our interview, so I'm using recording gear, but it's just kind of funny and fitting where I'm sitting. I'm staring at a line of new Cadillacs and Buicks and GMCs and Chevrolets, which is pretty funny. But that aside, please tell us about GM's EV first responder training. What is it exactly?
That's a great question. So we saw a need, General Motors saw a need for high quality training, and we decided to go after and be an industry leader and deliver this in-person training with hands-on touching product and engaging with subject matter experts face-to-face. Really, the first and second responders across North America want and deserve. So we did this training. We started last summer in Southeast Michigan, and we've been to over 20 different locations across the continent. This week we're in Ontario, Canada, but next week we'll be wrapping things up back at our Milford Proving Ground in Southeast Michigan. But the coasts on the east and west, as well as the Great Lakes, we were in Chicago, and very excited to deliver this training again in person and face-to-face.
Awesome. Now, please, Joe, forgive my ignorance. How would first responder training for electric vehicles be any different than gas-based ones? Can you elaborate?
Yeah, so let's parse that a little bit. And just the thing that we try to get across is that many of the emergency response procedures and techniques that folks have already been exposed to or have experienced from the field will be remarkably similar when dealing with electrified vehicles. Mm-hmm. There are some nuances and some differences with, you know, high voltage battery systems and stored energy and, of course, thermal and fire concerns. But we address all of those in the training, and we really try to put any, unfounded concerns or, thoughts behind us and move forward with this community, this very important community, in the future of EV adoption.
Is this tied at all, do you think, to some common misconceptions about EVs?
There really is. And, we are striving to provide the very best information, again, with subject matter experts from across the industry. And we didn't just do this in-house either. We reached out and, collaboratively partnered with the University of Illinois Fire Service Institute to deliver this training and help refine the delivery. A lot of it's going to look very familiar to National Fire Protection Association training that people might get online, but there are many, many misconceptions about electrified vehicles. The first that I kind of want to address, and the one is that this technology has evolved, but electrified vehicles have been around for a very long time. They've been around since the very beginning of motorized transportation. Mm-hmm. And General Motors has really been at the forefront of looking at alternative energies, looking at, alternative propulsion methods. And we strive to be the leader in electrification and electric vehicles. So mm-hmm. we're out here demonstrating a commitment to safety on the grandest scale and trying to set concerns and, let people know the facts from the folks that helped design, develop, and have to meet, very strict regulatory requirements around this technology.
Let's say there's an accident on the side of a freeway, side of a highway, where it's a multi-car collision and a first responder gets onto the scene to help those who are there. How would them being in an EV be different than being in a gas-based vehicle?
Significantly may not be any different. That's what okay. we're trying to get at. Many of the electric vehicle safety systems, the crash worthiness of the vehicles, the safety cages will be remarkably similar. The things that we want first responders to know and the highlights of the training include identification of high voltage components. In the industry, the automotive industry is settled on the color orange to identify high voltage mm-hmm. components, high voltage cabling, under hood or associated with the battery.
Yeah.
To say, don't touch, don't cut, don't try to pry or pull on these orange cables. That's a concrete example of one of the things we cover, and where those batteries are located is almost universally low in the vehicle. Mm. But, those rescue documents really are a wealth of information for folks.
Yeah, thanks for that, Joe. Just thinking about any kind of water damage or anything, their vehicle goes into a river or a lake, heaven forbid. I know it happens.
It does happen.
Yeah. Is there anything a first responder would need to do differently if it was an EV?
Battery designs and General Motors vehicles and, the industry standards are evolving, but all General Motors vehicles are not grounded through the ground. They're grounded to the chassis.
Yeah, so okay.
The vehicles will not electrocute anybody. It's not like a toaster in a bathtub or anything like that.
Been taught our whole lives that electricity and water don't get along. So I'm glad you clarified that, Joe. And this is something, mm-hmm. of course, no doubt someone would learn from completing the course. We are chatting with Joe McLean, GM's Global Product Safety and Systems Engineer. We're chatting about this new GM EV first responder training. Is it a course? And if so, is it handled online? Is it live in person? Tell us a bit about the program itself.
Yeah, you bet. So we wanted this to be as rigorous as possible, realizing that getting folks away from their jobs, whether they're full-time first responders or volunteer, it's very common in North America. We wanted to give these training sessions in a means that would facilitate mass participation. So what we've done is committed to being in a certain region, across North America for 2 days time, and we give 2 4-hour sessions a day, from 8 o'clock in the morning to 12 noon, and then we pause for follow-up questions or folks to talk to. Then we kick it off again at 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. local, wherever we're at. And we do that for 2 days. So attendees to the training only have to come to one session. That session of 4 hours is broken into separate learning zones or breakout sessions in which we have really focused discussions around, electrification basics and the batteries and the maturation of battery energy and storage technologies to incident response procedures and introduction of those rescue documents that I talked about before to what to do in case of a fire or, post-crash event. We know, electric vehicle batteries are transported via semi-truck, and there have been incidents of those semi-trucks rolling over and having, you know, electric vehicle batteries on highways in central Missouri. We had that happen. And so we have one of those damaged battery packs that we talk about, and we have a vehicle that was involved in a crash, and we talk about extrication, and we have connected vehicle solutions like OnStar. But it's really focused hands-on, in-person training, face-to-face. But, you know, that year of going all around North America is going to come to an end pretty soon. We can't do this, you know, full time and have our other jobs, you know, at General Motors or the University of Illinois. But we're going to pivot by later this year. We're anticipating mid quarter three, so sometime late summer, early fall, to have posted on the website that folks can go to right now, gmevfirstrespondertraining.com. And you'll be able to see all the training modules, all those breakout sessions from the subject matter experts, you know, in a, you know, well-produced online video. Nothing's going to replicate the hands-on, face-to-face, touching products, engaging with, you know, folks, but absent
pre-recorded videos and maybe questionnaires or tests.
Absolutely.
And Joe, is it free? And if so, do you get certification? Does a first responder get formal acknowledgement that they've completed the course?
For the in-person hands-on training, everything is free. Even the online training is going to be free, provided at no cost to any of the attendees that want to come. So we're doing this, you know, at no cost, and we've been fortunate enough to go to certain venues, whether they're universities or, you know, big departments on the East Coast like FDNY or LA Fire Department on the West Coast, to Denver Fire, to all these places have hosted us and wanted us in their, you know, venues. Mm-hmm. When we go online, folks will not get, the plan right now is to not get a certificate of completion, but for the in-person hands-on training events that folks register for and they come and they invest, you know, 4 hours of their time, they do get a certificate of completion. And again, it's signed by you know, GM and the director of the Illinois Fire Service Institute. So
yeah, again, to get more info, it's simply gmevfirstrespondertraining.com. Joe, thank you so much for carving out some time to chat. I wish you much luck and success with the rest of this tour.
Thanks, Mark. Really appreciate it.
We chat with Cisco when we return about AI, artificial intelligence. Are there any dangers to society by embracing it? You are listening to Tech Talk, powered by Epson Canada. We'll be right back with more Tech Talk.
Whether you're shopping around or looking for the on button, he can help. Tech Talk with Mark Saltzman on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
You don't need to be into tech to know the most buzzworthy word over the past few months is ChatGPT. It's a what's called generative AI chatbot. So it uses artificial intelligence, and it has amassed hundreds of millions of users since it debuted in late November. Love it or loathe it, you can expect to hear a lot more about this kind of technology going forward. And so who better to chat with about AI as a tool for work or play than Cisco, the Silicon Valley-based tech conglomerate that makes much of the gear used to power the internet today. Thrilled to have on the show for the first time, Jeetu Patel, Executive Vice President and General Manager of Security and Collaboration at Cisco. Welcome to the show, Jeetu. Great to chat with you.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Before we talk about AI, and if we have time, I'll also ask you about your partnership with the NFL. Very cool. But first, tell us a bit about Cisco.
Sure. So Cisco is a large networking, security, collaboration, and observability company. So we're a large cap company within the tech space. And our goal, easy way to kind of describe who we are, is whenever you connect to the internet, there is a bunch of plumbing that happens behind the scenes so that you get that beautiful page on the website, you get to hear someone's voice, or you get to see someone's video. All the plumbing that happens that makes that possible is us, but also makes that happen securely. And then the software that actually allows you to watch each other on video is also happening, some of the software that we build. So,
like WebEx, right? That would be an example of your video
like
communication
WebEx, exactly.
And collaboration tool. Anything about Cisco our listeners may not know? Any fun facts? Or,
you know, that we are 80% of the world's internet traffic actually goes through Cisco gear. Like that's
wow.
That's an interesting fun fact.
It sure is. Okay, so let's now talk AI and in the workplace as well. I know there's been a ton of buzz about ChatGPT, as I mentioned off the top. What is it exactly? What is this technology all about? And what are some of the main issues?
This whole notion of artificial intelligence, which is like, you know, the computer having intelligence similar to what a human being would have to go out and conduct tasks is an age-old concept. It's not a new concept. Mm-hmm. But there was a step function improvement that happened with ChatGPT. And the reason for that is they fundamentally showed people in an easy way the ability to understand language and reason as a machine, took things and possibilities to the next level, where you could ask a question and the computer would answer it. You could ask for reasoning and the computer would know what you were trying to look for. And this wasn't something that was being indexed across a large amount of corpus of data where you could just aggregate the information. The beauty about ChatGPT is artificial intelligence in the future that's most underestimated is it's going to create original insight that the human corpus of knowledge did not have. And so there will be new ideas that get generated from machines that humans did not generate. And that, I think, completely changes the way that you can start to think about the potential that artificial intelligence will have and the impact it has on humanity. Now, by the way, there's going to be great things that happen with this, but there's also a lot of downside that could happen with it. So you have to make sure that you act responsibly as we think about, you know, building out these systems. It's the next big platform the way I see it, and it's going to be as big as the internet, if not bigger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's talk about some of those potential downsides. I think it was Geoffrey Hinton, known as the godfather of AI, that said you should be concerned about ChatGPT, and Elon Musk, head of Twitter and SpaceX and one of the richest men in the world. I mean, obviously, if these tech visionaries are concerned, shouldn't we be?
The way I see this is there is a tremendous amount of upside because every human can now have an assistant, some sort of a ally that's going to be able to help you get your job done in a more effective way.
Yeah.
That's the upside of it.
Mm-hmm.
The downside is when machines get the ability to reason, when machines over time, there's this term called artificial general intelligence that we're moving towards. We're not quite there yet, but that's when any task that a human could do, a machine could do. When that starts to happen, there's definitely going to be risk of displacement of jobs. There's going to be risk of what happens if the machine can have its own ambition. What happens if the bad folks, like in the security sector, the adversaries and the threat actors can actually go out and use artificial intelligence to have much more targeted phishing attacks? So When you think about a security breach that happens typically, you might get an email from the Nigerian prince saying, click on this link and I'll give you $10 million. It's pretty easy to tell that this Nigerian prince is not a real guy when you actually read it, because it's got a bunch of typos and it actually looks kind of ridiculous. But in the future, these attacks are going to be much more specialized, much more bespoke. Where I'll say, hey, Mark, good to see you last week at your daughter's basketball game. Here are some pictures from it. And go click on the link, and that's actually going to download some malware. So I think there's a fair amount of downside that can happen with AI, because the bad folks have access to the same technology that the good folks have. And so it has to get regulated in some way. There has to be policy that's set effectively. But the policymakers have to work with the private sector. The policies that get set don't get set too late, and they're not too restrictive, but they're still protective of humanity.
G2, you've been quoted as saying that AI sometimes, quote unquote, hallucinates. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. So what happens is artificial intelligence technology, especially with large language models, which is what we see with ChatGPT, it is a predictive model where it can sometimes give you an answer with a tremendous amount of certitude that might in fact not be the right answer.
Right.
Oftentimes you'll see that there's the accuracy of data can be in question. Now, by the way, as the models get better and better, that'll go down, but there's still going to be a certain percentage of time that hallucination happens. Mm. And so in certain sectors, that might, the tolerance level for hallucination is much lower than what today's AI's models might actually be showing. So think about healthcare. And think about a diagnosis that needs to happen. You can't have 20% hallucination and 80% truth. You need to have it be much higher.
Yeah.
Think about cybersecurity, where you need to go out and, you know, make sure that you're protecting against breaches and attacks from either nation states or cyber syndicates. Like, you need to make sure that hallucination quotient is very, very low, if not non-existent. Having the right level of public-private partnership for setting policy, for making sure that there's regulation that allows humanity to remain safe while being productive, I think is going to be pretty important.
Very interesting. We're chatting with G2 Patel. He's EVP and GM of Security and Collaboration at Cisco. We're talking AI. artificial intelligence. What about leveraging AI for accessibility purposes? So for example, with a WebEx video call, can't AI add things like real-time captions to a chat?
Yeah, this is one of the areas where we've made a ton of progress. The level of progress we've made on speech being converted to text, and then that text be converted into different languages so that the hearing impaired can go out and read something if they're hard of hearing, or there are people who speak different languages that can be on a call and they can each speak a different language, but each understand each other, because this kind of barrier of language, barrier of physical location, barrier of disability of some sort, those things actually get reduced dramatically with AI. And
I love that. Leveling the playing field for everybody. Before I let you go, as I alluded to earlier, G2, tell us about the partnership with Cisco and the NFL.
Absolutely. So we are lucky to have customers like the NFL. And, you know, when you start thinking about how connectivity works and how people are able to go out and make sure that the infrastructure to go out and have millions of people view a game is done in a seamless manner where people don't even think about it. Cisco is behind the scenes working hard to make sure that that happens, but also how you can actually prevent security breaches from happening. As AI gets more sophisticated, the threat actors are actually making attacks look like normal course of action. And so what we have to do is make the cyber defenses even more sophisticated to make sure that we can detect when there's an attack versus just a normal course of action that's going on. And NFL is going to be a benefactor of that. And so will others. And we have a great partnership with them.
Awesome. Well, excited to learn more about that. And speaking of which, where can we learn more about your work in Cisco?
You know, you can go to cisco.com, and that's our website. You can follow me on jpatel41 on Twitter, or you can follow me on LinkedIn. And we have many, many kind of innovations that we're spending billions of dollars on that will really make lives of humans more connected, more inclusive, safer for the world. We're excited about what the future has ahead of us. And we also want to make sure that we act very responsibly as we go and roll these capabilities out so it doesn't create unintended consequences, because that's our responsibility as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, G2. Pleasure chatting with you. All the best. Thanks again.
Thank you, Mark.
When we return on Tech Talk, powered by Epson EcoTank printers that include up to 2 years worth of ink out of the box, we're going to catch up with Amber Mack, tech expert. Maybe you subscribe to her newsletter or hear her podcast called The Feed. She's going to join us to talk about tech for seniors, especially those who want to age in place. Stick with us. More Tech Talk coming right up after this.
Get the most out of your gadgets. Tech Talk with Mark Saltzman on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Welcome back to Tech Talk, everyone. This show is brought to you in part by LG Canada and its award-winning Ergo monitors. Experience a comfortable, more flexible desktop setup. Ergo design brings an innovative ergonomic arm to fit your needs. Secure the stand, monitor, and cables with its C-clamp, one-click mount, and simple cable management in seconds. Easily adjust the pivot, height, and tilt, and work with improved posture and productivity. Learn more about LG's award winning Ergo or ergonomic monitors at lg.ca. Because I like to focus so heavily on how tech can enhance and enrich our lives, perhaps it's no surprise I tend to write a lot about how seniors can leverage tech to remain more independent at home. The term is often referred to as aging in place or living in place, opposed to, you know, having to go to a long-term care facility. I write for publications like AARP in the US and Zoomer in Canada, both for boomers or zoomers. And so I loved hearing from my dear friend and colleague, Amber Mack, who put together a bunch of smart tech ideas for seniors. And she's joining us right now. Hi, Amber. Great to chat with you again.
Hey, Mark. It's great to chat with you too. And I think you're exactly right. The good news, I think, for anyone who wants to age in place is that technology really has become easier than ever. And there are lots of options for seniors that I would argue even 10, 15 years ago just weren't in place.
Right. And if you have a remote caregiver, like a daughter or a grandson, they can keep a virtual eye often on their aging relatives who may not be living with them in person. So it's the great facilitator tech, right? And so you wrote this awesome blog post on your website, ambermack.com, about aging in place and the tech that people may be able to use to help them and their loved ones. So where do you want to start, Amber?
Yeah, so let's start with going hands-free with voice tech for seniors. So the idea being using your voice to interact with technology on a device like the Amazon Echo Show. So what's great about this for seniors is that it has a beautiful looking 8-inch HD screen and also allows you to use your voice to do everything from listen to the news, to play music, setting medication reminders, or even timers, and also has something called gestures, which I'm sure you've heard about, Mark, where you can raise your hand if you had a timer sent and you want to actually turn the timer off. And I love this idea where we don't force seniors into looking at tiny little touch screens to use technology, but instead we're allowing them to use it in a much more natural way with voice and gestures.
Right. So powered by Alexa, of course, you can summon her. I use her in air quotes to, like you said, set reminders, to ask for recipes, to call someone. I think there's a camera on this smart display. And speaking of the display, this is not just a smart speaker, but a smart screen or display that does have that 8-inch HD touchscreen with hands-free calling support. You can even ask for weather. So not only will you hear Alexa tell you verbally what the weather is like for the day, but you may see visually a 7-day forecast, that kind of thing. So it's great. And I love the gestures feature. We should mention, Amber, that for all of the items we're going to be chatting about today, we're not going to mention prices on the air, but if you go to your website to read your blog, it's all there. So ambermac.com, it's at the top, right? Right now, it's at the top of your page?
You got it. So featured on the homepage. So super easy to find.
All right. So now can you tell us about monitoring your health with a smartwatch?
Yeah, so this is something I think more and more seniors are thinking about is how can they incorporate wearables into their life. My father has a wearable that he wears around his wrist, and my pick is the Withings Hybrid smartwatch. So it's actually called a scan watch. What it does is it's able to track your steps, your calories, your sleep, but it can also measure your heart rate, and it has a blood oxygen saturation reading capability as well. Mm-hmm. So super useful. This is from Best Buy. And what I love is that Best Buy also has something called Digital Citizen, where you can take online courses to learn how to use devices from companies like Withings, but also Healthy Homes, where you're able to get support from their Geek Squad agents to help you along the way. So this kind of fills that whole circle in terms of allowing seniors to learn how to use tech to better manage and monitor their health.
Yeah, love that. And it's just convenient as a wearable because it's just on your wrist and it'll let you know if there's any issues. Does this also have fall detection? Or we're going to get into that with another kind of wearable in a moment, but I was just wondering if that smartwatch also has a fall detector.
Many of them do. So this specific model that I have on my site does not have it, but there certainly are lots of different wearables that mm-hmm. do have that fall detection. And that is, of course, something to look out for if you have someone who's aging in place who is susceptible to falling.
Yeah, that's a big one, I think. Thanks for that. We are chatting with Amber Mack, tech expert and entrepreneur extraordinaire. She's a frequent guest on this program. We'll always love having her on. She wrote a blog post on her website, ambermack.com, about aging in place, how tech can help seniors live longer independently at home. So let's talk about the other kind of wearable, which is one that you might wear on a lanyard around your neck, the Lifeline Medical Alert System.
Yeah. So if you have a senior in your life who is susceptible to falling, there are a range of different alert systems that you can get from Lifeline. So the idea is with a wearable, either a lanyard around their neck or on their wrist, that they are able to press a button to call for help. But Mark, just to get to back to your point about fall detection technology, one of the things that is cool is that they do have fall detection technology actually designed and integrated into some of their devices. So the idea is that if for one reason or another, a senior wasn't able to press a button, the device would actually detect that a fall had happened. This is incredibly not just useful, but really life-saving because we know, again, if a senior is susceptible to a fall, this ensures that they are getting the help that they need in a timely fashion.
Another key differentiator between the Lifeline Medical Alert System and some fall detection in smartwatches is that you're actually speaking to a live live person. So if you are wearing, for example, an Apple Watch and you fall, it will ask you, are you okay? And if you don't tap yes or say yes, then it will go and start automatically calling through your contacts, including 911 if you want, but you don't speak to somebody live. So that's what's the difference between the Lifeline products and smartwatches. But you do, of course, have to pay for a monthly fee for that. There is a subscription fee. So just a heads up. And again, all the pricing is at ambermac.com. And then why don't we end off on something for simple cleaning? I guess robot vacuums can help, but there's other kinds of tech-infused vacuum solutions too.
Yeah. So the next pick I have is the LG Cord Zero all-in-one tower vacuum. So a couple of things I like about this, and I think cleaning your home, of course, can be very cumbersome if you don't have technology that is both lightweight, but also makes cleaning easy. So what this does is it's lightweight, weighing just over 5 pounds. And also it auto charges the battery when you put it back into the tower. And it also auto empties the dustbin every time you dock the vacuum. So those two things, Mark, are important, because if you think about the whole process of a senior who is aging in place, the reality is that they will want to be able to clean their home. This gives them something lightweight. When they dock it, again, they don't have to worry about, you know, emptying a bag and messing around with things. They can go weeks and weeks knowing that this is really kind of a frictionless experience from a cleaning and vacuuming perspective.
All right. Again, that is the LG Cord Zero all-in-one tower, weighing in at just under 6 pounds. Great. Awesome. Amber, as always, it's a pleasure chatting with you. Very informative. I encourage our listeners to check out this blog post for even more information, as well as pricing and photos, at ambermac.com. And I look forward to having you back on the program sooner than later, I hope. Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much, Mark.
While we often talk about new technology on this program, it's important to properly recycle your old tech, your end-of-life electronics. In fact, it's super easy to recycle your devices. Simply visit recyclemyelectronics.ca, type in your postal code or your address, and you'll find one of the many drop-off locations near you. After all, when it comes to your tech, what's inside counts. By responsibly recycling your end-of-life electronics with recyclemyelectronics.ca, you're keeping them out of landfills and the waste stream, and you're helping to recover and recycle valuable resources, which could then be put back into manufacturing. And you're protecting your personal data with ensured data destruction. When it comes to our devices, the future is literally in your hands. Don't let it go to e-waste. That website again is recyclemyelectronics.ca. Hey, for those who wished me a happy birthday last week, thank you so much. It was a lot of fun spending time in Cleveland for the Memorial Day long weekend with my wife Kelly and our three kids, visiting my wife's family down there, celebrating my birthday, which was super fun, and of course going to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I enjoy that so much, my first time. I hope you all have a fantastic rest of your weekend. As I mentioned, I'm in Brazil and then San Francisco, so I pre-recorded this weekend show early, but I will give you the deets next week on everything that I experienced this week with the wild, wonderful, and sometimes wacky world of technology. I can't wait to share it all with you. All the best, everyone. Talk to you next weekend on Tech Talk.